Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi, and a very good morning to you. This is Rabbi Michael Katz here with you. This is Judaism 101.9, and it's great to be in your company. It's a little chilly here in the Highveld the last couple of days, but otherwise, beautiful to be with you, beautiful to be sharing some thoughts with you on what is a very, very special day today, Gimel Tammuz, the third day in the month of Tammuz. But before we get there, just by way of introduction, you know, when you start learning with a child, it's written in all the books about Opsherenish, when you start teaching a child the alphabet, there is something about learning it forwards and backwards. And there is a similar principle, I think, when we have the idea of writing a Megillah backwards. It says, if you write the Megillah backwards, is it still kosher? Isn't it kosher? And the whole question about forwards and backwards. What's this business about forwards and backwards? Well, we're really told that the idea is that we should not look at things of only being in one direction in Torah and in Judaism. There's a lot of things that happen in the past that come back and that are here with us now, and there are many things that happen now that have a reflection on the future. In God's world, there is no front and back. There is no earlier and later. We talk about it as a principle in Torah learning. Ein me'ucharu mukdam b'Torah. There is no chronology that can be learned from the order of things in the Torah. Not everything happens chronologically. Why? Because in God's world, everything is happening kind of at the same time. There is no past, present, and future, and that's why the name of Hashem reflects that. Haya, Hoveh, and Yihyeh. God was and is and will be. Everything, past, present, and future, is, if there is such a word, conglomerated into one. So therefore, if you'll forgive me, we're going to start at the end of this week ahead. And we're going to jump to something that happened on the 9th of Tammuz. Now, today's the 3rd, remember, so the 9th of Tammuz will be next week, Wednesday, when we learn about the fact that the walls of Jerusalem were breached. This is in 423 before the Common Era. The Babylonian armies of King Nebuchadnezzar breached the walls of Jerusalem. It was on the 9th of Tammuz. It was the year 423 before the Common Era. King Tzidkiyahu of Yehuda was captured and taken to Bovel, to Babylon. A month later, the capture of Jerusalem was completed with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash and the exile of all but a small number of people. Were exiled then to Babylon. The 9th of Tammuz was observed as a fast day until the second breaching of Jerusalem's walls by the Romans on the 17th of Tammuz, at which time the fast was then moved and joined on that date. And it's also a sad day in 1244, where 24 wagon loads of Talmudic volumes were publicly burned by Christian church officials in Paris. Many works of Jewish scholarship were forever lost as a result, and some fast on this day, which is going to be the 9th of Tammuz next Wednesday, to lament this tragedy. The Spanish Inquisition was abolished, believe it or not, on the 8th of Tammuz, which is going to be commemorated or celebrated or thought about on Tuesday next week. It was on the July the 15th in 1834. The office of the Spanish Inquisition was abolished by Queen Mother Maria Cristina after nearly 3.5 centuries. However, the right of public worship, including permission to mark places of worship and advertise religious services, wasn't granted to Jews, believe it or not, until 1967. Wow. It stayed intact until that time. If we look at Monday, the coming Monday is going to be the 7th of Tammuz. Here, the Jewish community of a place called Ostro, which is now in western Ukraine, was miraculously spared when a Russian army led by General Suvorov attempted to breach its walls, claiming Polish insurgents were present inside. And to commemorate this miracle, the 7th of Tammuz was established as a local day of rejoicing. And a special scroll in which the story was inscribed was read each year on this date, and it became known as Purim Ostro. According to legend, two cannons that struck the great Maharsha Shul caused no harm. The two cannons were thereupon displayed in the shul for all to see. If we jump forward to Sunday, which is going to be the 6th of Tammuz, in 1976, an amazing thing happened on this day, and that was the Entebbe raid. Jewish hostages held up in by Arab terrorists, of course we know, at Entebbe Airport in Uganda, supported by Idi Amin and the Ugandan army, were rescued by Israeli commando units, and this all took place on the day of the 6th of Tammuz in 1976. And of course, the leader of that group being Yoni Netanyahu, brother of the current Prime Minister of Israel. If we look at the 5th of Tammuz, a couple of days' time, which is going to be on Shabbos, in the year 429 before the Common Era, Ezekiel, among the only prophets to prophesy outside the Holy Land, beheld a vision of what was known as the divine chariot, representing the spiritual infrastructure of creation. This vision took place, we're told, to Yechezkel, and he writes about it, and we read about it, and this was on the 5th of Tammuz. If we take a look at the 4th of Tammuz, it marks in 1171 the passing of Rabbeinu Tam, who was Rabbi Yaakov ben Meir of Ramarupt, grandson of famous Rashi, one of the primary authors of the Tosfos commentary of the Talmud. The Beit Din that he headed was regarded as the leading Torah authority of his generation, and the Maharam was imprisoned in 1286. Rabbi Meir ben Baruch, the Maharam of Rottenburg, great Talmudic commentator and great halachic authority for German Jewry, was imprisoned in a fortress in Enschesheim. A huge ransom was imposed for his release, and now there was a famous thing that was thought about and spoken about at length during the time when hostages were held, because they managed to raise money, but Rabbi Meir refused to allow payment of any ransom, lest it encourage further hostage taking, and he actually passed away in that captivity after 7 years of imprisonment. Which brings us forward to today. Today is Gimel Tammuz, the 3rd of Tammuz. Now, there are so many things that happened in history on this date, and not the least of which was that in 1273, before the Common Era, the famous story of Joshua making the sun stand still happened on the 3rd of Tammuz. It was in the year 1273 before the Common Era, leading the Jewish people into battle to conquer Eretz Yisrael. Yeshua saw that victory was imminent, but it was about to get dark. Sun, proclaimed Joshua, be still at Givon. Shemesh be Givon Dom. Sun, stand still at Givon. And the moon at the Ayalon Valley. The heavenly bodies acquiesced, halting their progress through the sky, until Israel's armies brought the battle to its successful conclusion. Now, also on this date in 1927, the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok Schneerson, was released from imprisonment. He'd been arrested on charges, of course, of spreading Judaism. The actual release came about on the 3rd of Tammuz, and he was allowed 6 hours to come home on that day and then to go into exile. Remember, he had been sentenced actually to death and then commuted to life imprisonment, and that all changed on the 3rd of Tammuz. We'll get to the main point about Gimel Tammuz, the 3rd of Tammuz, right after this short break. But if you're dreaming about Aliyah, your future in Israel starts here.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi and welcome back. Yes, this is Rabbi Michael Katz here with you on Judaism 101.9. And we're talking about events over the days of this week of Tammuz. Remember, as we mentioned last week, the month of Tammuz is first month of real summer in the Northern Hemisphere in Israel. Apparently, northern climate having a number of heat waves around. But it is also a day that has that edge or that tinge of sadness within it, because, of course, best known is the starting of the 3 weeks, which begins on the 17th of Tammuz. And as we saw in our little introduction here, a run-up of different dates, there are a number of really difficult things for us to have dealt with that occur in the early part of the month of Tammuz as well. But we're on Gimel Tammuz. Today is the third day in the month of Tammuz. The third day in the month of Tammuz, of course, besides the fact that it marks the day on which the sun stood still in the days of Joshua, and besides the fact that it marks the day on which the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, the father-in-law of our Rebbe, was actually released from imprisonment, direct imprisonment, where he was at first under the sort of the threat of a death penalty, and then commuted to life imprisonment, and then that was altered to exile, and that all came about, the change and the release from direct imprisonment to that exile, although the exile was pretty rough and tough and harsh and so on, but that happened on the 3rd of Tammuz. So besides all of that, today was the day 32 years ago that the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson of righteous memory, who was born in 1902, he passed away in the early hours of the morning on the 3rd of Tammuz of the year 5754 or 1994. And so today is a day that is marked as the Yahrzeit of the Rebbe. But you know, when you say that word Yahrzeit to the majority of Jews around the world, Yahrzeit, it immediately causes the mind to focus on sadness, on the loss. It causes us to focus on the sadness, excuse me, pressed the wrong button there, the sadness and the loss that one experiences at the time of thinking about the person that you lost that time ago. So 32 years ago, the darkest, saddest thought of a day when the Rebbe would no more be around on earth was something that probably passes through the minds of the majority of people hearing about a Yahrzeit. But the Rebbe himself so often explained, and it was spoken about not only by him, but the previous Rebbes before him, and going all the way back to Talmudic times, if we think about people like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, that the day of the Yahrzeit of a tzaddik is rather termed an elevation. It's often called a hilula, but a day of elevation, the elevation of the soul, and a day in a way of not only commemoration, but also celebration of the incredible things that that individual, that tzaddik accomplished here on earth. But the most important thing that is so often mentioned and that is so important is to remember that when we think about a tzaddik, and perhaps we as Judaism 101.9 listeners need to think about, is every single day in our prayers we mention Avraham, Yitzchok, and Yaakov. Every single day we invoke the memory of our forefathers. And so we do, when we're giving brachas to our children, of our mothers, and so we do for so many righteous tzaddikim, leaders. We speak about Moshe Rabbeinu on a daily basis in our tefillot, in our prayers, in our Torah readings, and so on. And the more we speak about them, and the more we learn from them, and the more we realize what influence they have on our lives, it's not relegated to past tense. On the contrary, it's very much present. It's with us all the time. Every single day, we keep them alive. We keep them alive not only by talking about them, but learning their Torah, learning from them. And in that way, every Jew has the feeling of the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu is with us, that Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov are right there. We're davening just like they did. We're involved in things just like they are. And how much more so when it's so much closer to us, so much closer to home, so to speak, and we have not only people who had an active involvement and connection directly with the Rebbe, as many of us did, but the fact that the Rebbe is so large and present in our lives, and especially in the lives of the Jewish people post-Holocaust, when we know that it was during this past week that we celebrated, commemorated the date on which in 1941 the Rebbe actually arrived in America and began a program of the rejuvenation of Jews outside of Israel in the diaspora. And then that spilled over, of course, to inside Israel after 1948, where you had so much involvement in the rebirth and the reconstruction of the Jewish people after what was meant to be the devastation of the Jewish people in the Holocaust, that the Rebbe lives with us and we live with the Rebbe, and the Rebbe was so involved in every part of the reframing and the reorganization and the re-establishment of Yiddishkeit, of Judaism, in America and around the world. It was a program that was and is absolutely incredible, and that almost every Jew today needs to take a careful thought or a careful look at the fact that there probably, God forbid, would not be anywhere near what there is today were it not for the Rebbe's influence and the Rebbe's input and the Rebbe's building of Yiddishkeit, of Judaism, and of Am Yisrael, of the Jewish people. It wasn't totally single-handed, but yes, the influence of the Rebbe almost single-handedly in reconstructing and reframing and reorganizing and refocusing on what the world viewed as a, or certainly the Jewish world at the time of the Holocaust and thereafter, a dastardly world, a terrible world, a world that was full of evil, a world that should, in most people's thoughts at the time, it should just vanish, it should be destroyed, it should be forever taken down because it's just bad and it's full of rotten people and bad things. The Rebbe reframed all of that and rephrased it all and made it clear that everything that we have to do to return the world to what it is, a beautiful, pristine garden of a world, a magnificent world, a world that is filled with goodness, a world that is filled with holiness and with kindness. And it's all up to us to actually take a look at this harshness and put it up against what there should be, and to not only yearn for what there should be, not only yearn for the coming of Mashiach, not only yearn for a world that is far better, but actually create that world. And it starts with framing. It starts with the way that we refer to things. It starts with the way we talk about stuff. If you place yourself in a negative mindset and you talk in a negative way, well, not only what do you expect from your children, but what do you expect from the world? The world itself will follow suit. We become the masters of our own self-fulfilled prophecies of taking ourselves down and taking the world down with us. And, of course, there are so many different ways to look at everything. And, you know, the old phrase of, you know, you can look at the glass half full or the glass half empty, but it's much more than that. The Rebbe instructed and showed and told us. You can look at the darkness and the difficulties and the horrific occurrences, and the Rebbe himself knew great difficulties that was surrounding him, not only in Russia and the way that his parents were treated and the fact that his parents never made it to his own wedding because they were in exile, and the fact that there were so many battles that were going on in Eastern Europe for the survival of Judaism. And then coming as he did to America as a young man with his father-in-law who'd been tortured and who came there and was only then to last about another 10 years from then as the leader of Chabad, and then the Rebbe himself taking over and fighting against a whole new evil of assimilation and of sort of a natural knee-jerk reaction of a world that wanted to turn its back on Judaism. Judaism needed to be relegated to the annals of history in the minds of most because it represented archaic difficulties. It represented suffering. It represented pogroms, and it represented Holocausts, and it represented Auschwitzes and so on. The Rebbe reframed that all. He turned it all around. And his target market, or the way that the Rebbe went about it, was displaying and showing absolute love for everybody, a love and a care for every single individual, for Jews, for non-Jews, for men, for women, for children, for everybody, old, young, The whole reframing of everything, that instead of looking at people as being bad, evil, suspicious of them, look for and bring out the goodness within them and explain to them and help them to understand how each and every one of them is a part of God's creation. Every one that is around the world was waiting for you to be born, for you to have another day as you do have today, thank God. And that in this day you can do so much, you can accomplish so much, not only for yourselves and for your families and for your community and for those directly around you, but for this whole world. The Kedusha, the holiness that we can bring into this world, the mitzvahs that we can do. And every mitzvah is a flame, is a bright light that continues to give. It's something nitzchi, it's something that is everlasting. And in this way, as we ascribe to and as we take on board what it is that the Rebbe taught us and the Rebbe stood for, we ourselves become those bearers of this eternal message, of the eternal foundational mechanism to not only keep our world alive, but to make our world a far, far better place, firmly established on the foundations of eternity, of things of eternity, which is and are our Torah and our mitzvot. And this all ascribed to the Rebbe, Lubavitcher Rebbe, whose yahrzeit it is today. And hopefully we too can connect with the Rebbe today in a unique fashion and make it part and parcel of our lives going forward. But
get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi and welcome back. Yes, we've been talking about Gimel Tammuz, the third day of Tammuz. And of course, we know the concept of threes being important in Judaism. It has the establishment of what we call a chazaka, something that makes it a permanence. And perhaps within that there is something about the permanence of the presence of a tzaddik, of the caliber of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and the place that he occupied in the world and the place that he continues to occupy. Because the Rebbe established so much, did so much for Judaism, if you think about it, worldwide. You know, it's often a thing that every year they have what they call the Kinnus HaShluchim, they have the Shluchim Conference, the conference of all the Lubavitcher Rebbe's emissaries that happens in New York around about November time. And over the years, they've always had the idea of what they call a roll call. They go around the countries and they applaud the various numbers of Shluchim of Lubavitcher emissaries around the world. But then they do something fascinating, and that is that they certainly used to, I don't know if they still do, but they used to in the past, they take a look at the number of people who went out on the Rebbe's mission as Shluchim, as Lubavitcher emissaries around the world in the periods of time from, you know, all those who went out in the 50s and all those who went in the 60s and the 70s and 80s and so on. And the amazing thing is that since that fateful day in 1994, the Rebbe's Yahrzeit and Gimel Tammuz, there are so many, thousands and thousands of young people who have gone out to far-flung places around the world. Not only those who've gone out, but the strengthening of Torah and Judaism and Chabad in and around the world is absolutely mind-blowing. It's absolutely incredible. And if we think about it, even here in South Africa, that around about that time, 93 is sort of the time that kind of marks the big change in South Africa, the incredible encouragement that the Rebbe gave to South Africa and to the Jewish people in South Africa, and the fact that this is a country that has brachas, that has blessings, the blessings that flow through this country. It's in its earth, it's in its atmosphere, it's in its people, it's in everything, that this is a country that has God's rich blessings, and the blessings, the brachas that the Rebbe identified, he continually told people, including my own late father, who was instructed, told by the Rebbe that This is a country that would be good until the coming of Mashiach, and then once questioned by somebody, what does that mean? You say Mashiach is going to come today or tomorrow. Does it mean it's only good for a day or two? And the Rebbe smiled and said, no. When Mashiach comes, it will be even better. This is a country that carries rich and beautiful brachas, beautiful, beautiful blessings. And we need to remember that so much is up to us to continue that legacy, to continue that teaching, and to continue that atmosphere of positive energy. Instead of talking things down, instead of complaining, well, let's do something about the difficulties that we have, if there are any. And lately, I guess, since that fateful day in October a few years ago, when the whole world went crazy, and when anti-Semitism raised its ugly head all over the world, we started thinking about the fact that once again, doomsday or holocausts were on their way. One of the places that was, thank God, the best place to be on earth was right here in South Africa. The incredible atmosphere and the incredible people. And yes, of course, we have those who take it upon themselves to be the moral callers of the world and, you know, forget about looking in their own backyard and therefore call up things like genocides against Israel and so on. But the average person or the people of South Africa and the country itself is so good and so positive. People visiting here still marvel at the kind of community that we have, at the kind of society that we have, at the kind of Jewish institutions, the kind of shuls, the kind of hierarchy, and then some of Jewish establishments and Jewish influence. It is something absolutely and unimaginably incredible. We've got such a beautiful South African Jewish community. We have such an incredible atmosphere and such an incredible place to be proud of. And South Africa needs to continually remind itself of the Rebbe's brachas. The brachas that the Rebbe gave for this country flow through and make sure that this is an incredible place to be. And let's remember that the Rebbe encouraged people not to leave here at a time when people wanted to abandon and thought it was time to get out of here. As they used to say, the writing is on the wall. And the Rebbe said, no, you got to read it from the other side, and you got to remember that it is so great and so good and so blessed that this is a place that needs to look at its strengths and look at its beauty and look at it, look at its grandeur, and it will last forever.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi and welcome back. Yes, this is Rabbi Michael Katz. This is Judaism 101.9. And we need to pause for a moment today and think about our own personal connection with what it was, what it is that the Rebbe stood for. How many people have traveled around the world and have, before they look up anything else today, had the incredible opportunity to look for a Chabad near where they're staying, whether it's for a Friday night meal, whether it's for Jewish help with kosher food, whether it's a minyan because you need to say Kaddish. Today it's almost goes without saying that you travel, and wherever you travel, you kind of feel comforted at the fact that there is a Chabad nearby. And you think about how many times Chabad emissaries, Chabad shluchim, have been involved in difficult events, and there can be small things, you know, a plane delayed and in a far-flung place, and people having to spend Shabbat there, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, a Chabad emissary and his family arrive, and they've got gefilte fish, and they've got whatever you need for your challahs for Shabbos, and wine, and so on, right up until times of difficulty and times of disaster. Chabad has become really the backbone of Judaism throughout the world. And this was, in fact, the Rebbe's vision. The Rebbe's vision to create and to make a place that cares for everybody, everywhere, and at all times. A place of love, a place of ahava, a place of giving, a place of caring, a place of sharing, that the Rebbe wanted established by Chabad and by people and by Jews all over the world. And as we do that, and if we can do that, well, we're tapping into the energy that the Rebbe imparted to us, to this world. And by doing that, so the Rebbe's influence and the Rebbe himself continues. And so on a day like today, when it's a day of what we would term a Yahrzeit, it's a day to rededicate ourselves to all the things that the Rebbe taught us, to all the brachas that the Rebbe gave, and to all the notions of positivity and positive energy and positive framing that the Rebbe gave to each and every one of us. And when we do that, we can, and we do, change the whole world. It may seem small. It may seem to be not quick enough. But look at the incredible influence that it does have and that it can have. And the one small seeming drop in the ocean can have a huge, major impact. It never dies. It continues. And that is the incredible power of Gimel Tammuz, of this great and wonderful day. And so please God, as the day progresses and thereafter, we will ourselves make that kind of connection, that kind of commitment. And we look forward. If there are some out there who have as yet not done so, please book for a very special event taking place tonight at a great venue here in Joburg, where you can come along and you can participate in a wonderful event saluting a tribute to the timeless inspiration of our Rebbe. We have a great, incredible guest speaker called Rabbi David Eliezeri, who's written books and who's lectured around the world, and you won't be disappointed. Come along, participate, and commit yourself to making this world a better place in honor and tribute of Gimel Tammuz and the Lubavitcher Rebbe. I want to leave you with that thought and wish you a great rest of the week, a great Shabbos up ahead. I look forward to being back with you same time, same place again next week on Judaism 101.9.